The following is a listener-supported ministry from the Grace Evangelical Society.
What is the meaning of the outer darkness in Matthew's gospel? Well, that's what we're going to discuss on today's episode of Grace in Focus. Hi, I'm Lucas Kitchen with the Grace Evangelical Society, and you're joining us for a great episode, an episode in which we are taking questions from listeners just like you. If you've got one of those head scratchers, those questions that keeps you up at night, I hope you'll zap it to us. You can reach us through email, radio@faithalone.org. We look forward to hearing from you. Now, I want to remind you about our national conference. This is something that happens every year, and it's a special event. It's a special occasion. I hope that you can join us. You can find out more about our national conference by going to faithalone.org, click on events, and you can even register right there on the site. All right, let's go to today's discussion with Dr. Bob Wilkin and Sean Lazar. Here's Grace in Focus.
Well, hello, listeners. My name is Sean Lazar.
Well, hello, listeners. I'm Bob Wilkin. I didn't know we called everybody listeners.
Are they listeners or listener? Danny say we have to talk to people like they're the only person listening? You are the only person listening, and we're so glad that you are listening. All right, here's a question from Sean, and he spells it the correct way.
You wrote your own question?
No.
What's
not for
the
me.
Correct way to spell Sean?
The correct way is S-H-A-W-N.
What about S-E-A-N?
That is the correct way. S-E-A-N is it's an aberration, and there's a blood feud between the two Seans, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we're not supposed to talk about it, but... it's
you're not supposed to talk about it. Okay.
Anyway, Sean asked the question. First, I love your teachings. I love how when emails start this way.
Right.
It's much better than y'all are nincompoops. It's much better. I have grown so much by your teachings. One teaching I'm having trouble with, though, is about the outer darkness. I have been taught that the outer darkness was for believers who don't persevere in the faith. My church hasn't really preached much on the issue, so I'm a little confused, as someone else has told me the outer darkness was for unbelieving Jews. Could you explain the outer darkness to me?
Okay, well, that's a big question. I remember the first time I was confronted by this, I think it was 1985, so what is that, 36 years ago, and I was speaking at a church, I think in Athens, Texas, small Southern Baptist church. As I was doing some pulpit supply, I was asked this question, and I kind of fumbled it to some degree. But I do think I said then what I know now is there's only three references to the outer darkness in the entire Bible.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like this is a very common expression that we really need to give a lot of attention to because we see it everywhere.
Right.
It's not like the word believe that occurs 100 times in John's gospel alone. Secondly, I think it's important to recognize, and I believe I did point out those many years ago, that only occurs in Matthew's gospel.
Right.
We don't find it in any of the epistles or anywhere else. A third thing that's important to recognize is the Greek doesn't exactly mean the outer darkness. It probably is better to translate it the darkness outside. Because in the examples that we have, like it occurs in Matthew 8, Matthew 22, and Matthew 25. In the Matthew 22 passage, it's about a marriage supper.
Right.
It's someone who's improperly dressed. They're invited to the wedding. They accept the invitation. They come to the wedding, but then they're improperly dressed, and so they're cast into the outer darkness or the darkness outside, the wedding festivities. So this darkness outside is contrasted with the great joy and light in the banquet hall.
Right.
Now, in Matthew chapter 25, you have the parable of the talents, and you've got three servants of Christ who are all evaluated, and the first two are praised and given cities to rule over, but the third is not praised, instead is rebuked and is given no cities to rule over. So let's now kind of see if we can pull it together. Look, first of all, I think at Matthew chapter 8. I believe it's around what, verse 12?
Verse 11, and I say to you that many will come from east and west and sit down with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. But the sons of the kingdom, verse 12, will be cast out into outer darkness. There will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. So there's this warning, and maybe I should set it up this way. The reason why this comes up so often in free grace circles or against the faith alone position is that this is a warning passage, and it seems to be heavily negative result that people often think identify with hell, basically. And they think, well, people are being cast into the outer darkness on the basis of their works, and the outer darkness is hell, and so therefore works, if you don't have enough works, then you're going to go to hell. And so faith alone can't be true. You need works in order to avoid hell / the outer darkness. But your approach and Zane's approach, and I think a lot of dispensationalists see this pretty differently.
Right. First of all, the expression weeping and gnashing of teeth is not a technical expression for Hades or the upcoming lake of fire.
Like people think of like The Simpsons, and whenever they kind of depict hell and Satan is there with his goatee and his pitchfork and people are like suffering in the flames. And or if they don't think of The Simpsons, they think of medieval Italian right. paintings or something. But it really just means you're really upset.
Weeping you're and just gnashing of teeth is an expression of grief. And yes, people in the lake of fire will experience grief. They will experience torment and weeping and gnashing of teeth. But that's not the only context. In fact, what we find in Scripture is that this idea of weeping or the idea of gnashing of teeth are expressions of grief. And when you put them together, they are. And so this could apply to a believer. For example, Jesus wept. John 11:35,
sure.
with the great torment that Lazarus's family and friends were in as they were grieving over his death, and Jesus wept. Well, was he grieving? Yes.
Yeah.
Does that mean he was in Hades, in the bad part of Hades? No.
Basically, people have to disentangle themselves from this idea that just because there's weeping and gnashing, that means it's torture for all eternity. You got to remember, this is like a first century context. The Jewish people are extremely expressive. When they're upset, they're tearing their beards out. They're tearing their clothes apart. Have you ever been so upset that you just tore your clothes apart? That's not something that we would do.
Not yet, but I'm only 69. Maybe yeah, when I'm 70,
it might happen.
I'll start ripping
I'll
my
try
clothes.
To push you one day and you just tear your shirt off like Hulk Hogan. But, I mean, that's what they did. So this is an expression of maybe a show of emotion that we kind of Anglo-Saxons are probably not very used to.
Right. And notice who it is that will be cast into the outer darkness, the sons of the kingdom. Now, I don't know about you, but sons of the kingdom, another way of saying that would be kingdom sons. Kingdom sons doesn't sound like unbelievers. Now, I realize if you're saying unbelieving Jews, you could argue that, okay, these are people who should have been sons of the kingdom, but they're not.
Right.
But
right.
what the text says, what Jesus says, they're sons of the kingdom. Now, guess what? The expression sons of the kingdom only occurs one other time in Matthew, and it happens to be in the parable of the wheat and the tares.
Okay.
What's the good stuff in the wheat and the tares?
The wheat.
And what's the bad stuff?
The tares.
If their argument is correct that somehow this must refer to unbelieving Jews,
yeah.
then we would expect the sons of the kingdom to be which, the wheat or the tares?
The tares.
Ah, but guess what?
If it only has one definition.
Right, but guess what? They're the wheat.
Right.
In Matthew chapter 13 and verse 38, it says, the field is the world, the
yeah.
good seed are the sons of the kingdom,
yeah.
but the tares are the sons of the wicked one. It doesn't absolutely force the idea that sons of the kingdom in chapter 8 must be believers, but it would be rather odd for Matthew to cite these two teachings of Jesus, only two where he talks about sons of the kingdom,
right.
and have one of them refer to unbelievers and one believers.
Right.
But secondly, when you go over to Matthew chapter 22, which is the second example, and by the way, we have a good article by Greg Sapaw at faithalone.org on this passage. He did his master's thesis at Dallas Seminary on this passage, and it's the parable of the marriage supper. And as I already mentioned, in the parable of the wedding supper, the person who's cast into the outer darkness is someone who accepts the invitation to the wedding, which suggests a believer.
Right.
There's all kinds of people who reject the invitation. There's the wedding, and they keep inviting more and more people, and they go out into the highways.
Right.
They go out and gather all the people they can find,
yeah,
which
yeah.
probably suggests Gentiles. They've gone out from Israel, and they're going to the whole world. And this is one of the people that accepts it. And the fact that he's improperly dressed doesn't mean he's not at the wedding. He is.
Right. He's in the kingdom. He's at the wedding. He's at the table.
If that's what that illustrates.
Right.
And what he misses out on are the joys associated with the wedding feast, which is joys associated with ruling with Christ.
And so this kind of goes back to your earlier point where you said, you know, the outer darkness. But the darkness outside, now you can kind of read it a little bit differently for what it's saying here. It's the darkness outside of where?
It's outside the wedding festival.
Outside of the wedding festival.
And the third example.
So it's like you get kicked out of the party.
Right.
Now that's a lot less scary than thinking that the outer darkness is a place in the underworld somewhere where you get tortured. No, you get kicked out of the club because you don't have you don't have a pass.
You're not dressed properly for ruling.
Right.
By the way, in the book of Revelation, the white garments of the overcomers signify their works that are pleasing to God.
Right. So if his garments are the works he's supposed to have to qualify himself for ruling, this
he
is
doesn't
a rewards
have
passage. And
right.
He doesn't have those things.
And the third passage, I think I can hit it quickly, and that's the parable of the talents. Or do you want to take this on the next episode?
Maybe we can take it on the next episode. We might not even have to, but maybe just to summarize it for Sean, we should clarify one thing. You don't think that the outer darkness is like a penalty box in the kingdom.
It's not a real place.
This is just a metaphor as part of an illustration.
This isn't Siberia or something.
No, it's just it's a metaphor for the experience of missing out on those rewards.
Right. We know from 1 Thessalonians 5:10 that whether we're awake or whether we're watchful or whether we're morally asleep when Christ returns, we're going to live forever with him. So we can't miss out on the millennium, and we can't be put in some corner of the kingdom where we really aren't experiencing anything.
Right,
no,
right.
Every believer will have an experience of the millennial and on the new earth, the extended eternal kingdom.
So what Jesus is saying is, listen, guys, if your lives don't shape up, if they don't measure up, you're going to get kicked out of the party. That's how you're going to feel. He's not saying there's going to be a literal party that you're going to get kicked out of. But he's talking about an experience of shame.
And the shame will be not forever. It'll just be at the judgment seat of Christ. The person will experience shame. 1 John 2:28 says that. So, yeah, let's pick up in the next episode and just wrap up with the parable of the talents. We've discussed it before, but it bears answering. So we'll see you next time. Thanks.
Thank you, gentlemen, for that great discussion. Would you like to explore more of the topics that we talk about on this show and don't know where to do it? Well, I'm going to tell you where. It's at faithalone.org. That's our website, faithalone.org. On the site, we have all kinds of free resources that are designed to help you grow and mature in your faith and your understanding of Scripture. For example, we have this beautifully laid out full-color magazine that you can get a free subscription. Just go to faithalone.org and sign up on the site. Would you like to become a financial partner with this show? Well, if so, you can find out how to do that on faithalone.org. All gifts are tax-deductible and very much appreciated because it's how we stay on the air. By the way, we love to hear from our listeners. Maybe you've got a comment, feedback, or even a question. If you do, I'll give you our email address so that you can reach out to us. It's radio@faithalone.org. That's radio@faithalone.org. On tomorrow's program, we're going to spend a little bit more time talking about the outer darkness, so join us for that. I'm Lucas Kitchen with the Grace Evangelical Society, and until next time, let's keep grace in focus.
The proceeding has been a listener-supported ministry from the Grace Evangelical Society.